Well, I like the setup here. Our hosts have been great in kind of giving us this little casual format here where we've got tables and stand-up desks and stuff, so let everybody get adjusted. So I'm Brian Stemme from BioCrossroads, and I have the fortunate role today of being able to be the moderator for today's great event. Really excited about it because we've got just a set of people that are really going to be able to provide some information. We're really going to try to accomplish two things today. If we can get those done, and we will be happy. One is to give you an update on 16 Tech Community Corporation and a related entity that will be building out the 16 Tech Innovation District. So giving you an update so you know what's going on. But just as importantly, thinking about examples of what industry and universities and research institutes are doing to kind of rethink what they're doing from a change and a strategy perspective. We're going to be hearing from speakers that are already kind of metaphors. They're already examples of what 16 Tech's going to be accomplishing over the next few years. And so we want to highlight those companies today and have them talk about why they're changing and then how the 16 Tech emphasis, the place, the nuance, the spirit is going to enhance what they're doing. Real quickly, I have some things I need to do first. First of all, thank you to Butler University for hosting us in this great facility. I always love being here. As a Butler grad, I wish I would have had a facility like this to be in, but it's exciting to see it. We'd like to thank our sponsors, BSA Life Structures, Indie Science Connect, and Miles Printing, who put the brochure together that you have. As I said, we're going to be talking about the 16 Tech Innovation District today, and then again, more broadly, how do innovation districts help entities collaborate and work together in ways that maybe they haven't in the past. You know, Indianapolis is ready for this. We've got robust life sciences industry, which will be the main focus of today, but we have a great tech industry. It's small but growing really fast, and that's exciting. And then we've got advanced manufacturing entities that we also sense will be coming into the district. Big, great companies that you've all heard of that we think will have roles. And again, real quickly, I think we're excited to talk about IBRI today, too, because IBRI, and I'll let Vanessa talk a little bit about it, really is also kind of a metaphor for what 16 Tech represents, having a cross-functional, multi-stakeholder group coming together, working on things that they may not have worked on if they weren't working together. So let me go ahead and say thank you to our sponsors, and let me introduce Bob Coy. He's going to be our first speaker talking about 16 Tech. He's the CEO of 16 Tech Community Corporation, previously the CEO of CincyTech, and had other significant leadership roles in economic development. So I'm going to turn it over to him.
Good morning, everyone. And it's a pleasure to be here again with my friend Rob Lyles. We've done this a number of times together, Melissa, and also Vanessa. And with you to give you a quick update on 16 Tech. So 16 Tech is 60 acres, as you can see here. This is what it will look like when it is built out. Bounded by Fall Creek and the White River on about 60 acres. We are focused on attracting companies, startups, and established companies in the biosciences, tech, and advanced engineering sectors. We are an innovation district, and an innovation district is a concept that is popping up across the country today in urban areas, generally in the urban core, adjacent to anchor institutions such as universities and research hospitals. They're really leveraging three things: the importance of clustering, the clustering of anchor assets such as universities, research hospitals, and companies, convergence. A lot of innovation today is the result of converging technologies in the physical sciences, the biosciences, the computational sciences, and the engineering sciences. And innovation districts are trying to pull together companies and people with expertise in these areas to create a really dynamic and robust innovation environment. And collaboration. There's a social element to innovation districts that gets people out of the silos of their organizations to interact with each other. Innovation districts are attractive to established companies, such as companies like Cook and Roche Diagnostics here, but also to startups. And they also contain within them generally incubators, accelerators, universities generally have a presence. It's just an agglomeration of assets that are all part of the innovation process. And this is what we're attempting to build here in our building here in Indianapolis. Our vision, our vision for 16 Tech is to drive Indiana to the next level of global leadership through a strategy that will enable us to attract, develop, and retain talent by leveraging our anchor institutions, which in this case, the case of 16 Tech, are the companies that are in the region, the IUPUI campus, as well as the research hospitals, which are all adjacent to 16 Tech. This is a project that has been a long time in coming, as you can see from this timeline. It was first conceived of in 2002, and then nothing really happened until 2015, when the city of Indianapolis appropriated $55 million of tax increment financing to undertake infrastructure projects necessary to make it possible to develop the site. The 16 Tech Community Corporation was formed at that time, which I lead, to oversee the project. And we signed a project agreement with the city. And then that all happened in December of 2015. And then early in 2016, there was an environmental issue that reared its head that brought the project to a stop for about a year. There's an aquifer underneath 16 Tech, it's not just 16 Tech, it's like a large part of the city, that had minor traces of a contaminant. And there was a possibility that the site would have been named a Superfund site, not just us, but all the sites on top of this aquifer. If that had happened, we wouldn't have been able to develop the site. But that all changed in 2017 when the EPA decided that it would not be a Superfund site. This is not there's a slight trace of contamination in the water, but it wasn't deemed to be a health problem. And so we were able to then move ahead. I was hired in June of 2017. We immediately then began negotiations with Browning Investment. We need a developer. We're the master developer of 16 Tech, but we needed a developer to develop our buildings. And so we worked with Browning and are working with Browning. We signed a developer agreement with Browning for the first four projects, which we'll talk with you about today. We also have a strong commitment to the surrounding neighborhoods of 16 Tech, neighborhoods like Riverside and Hawville and Hawthorne, which tend to be lower income neighborhoods. This is not unusual around the country. If you look at innovation districts and where they're located, they tend to be located near major hospitals and research institutions in places like Baltimore, Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, St. Louis, and the neighborhoods around those anchor institutions had declined over the years, just like ours had. And so innovation districts frequently have as part of their mission to create opportunities for the residents in the nearby neighborhoods to benefit from the development of the district through workforce development and education initiatives primarily. And we will have a focus on working with those communities in our neighborhood. And the city of Indianapolis has seeded a community investment fund with $3 million, which we will use to have partnerships with the communities, as I mentioned, primarily in workforce development and education. And tenants who move into 16 Tech will contribute 20 cents per square foot into this fund in perpetuity to help keep the effort going over time. We also, in 2018, received a large grant from the Lilly Endowment of $38 million. That's for infrastructure support, operating support for the 16 Tech Community Corporation. And we will be building a bridge. Where's it at here, Brian? What's that? Oh, over there. Where? Here. That's the bridge. Okay, a little disoriented. This connects to Riley Drive. Those of you who know what Riley Drive is, into 16 Tech. By the way, this is where Cook Regentech is located right now, and you'll hear from Rob Lyles a little bit later about what they're doing there, which is very exciting. Our first projects are up in this area. Our first office building goes about here. This is the old Citizens Energy Water Company headquarters, where we plan to have incubators and co-working space. This is an old high bay garage where we plan to have a maker space. This is a multifamily apartment building. So these will be the first projects that I'll show you about. I just wanted you to see where they're located. Okay. Vanessa, who is with the Indiana Bioscience Research Institute, is representing the anchor tenant at 16 Tech. And this is the first building that we will be breaking ground on in November that will house the Indiana Bioscience Research Institute on the first three floors. The fourth floor will be home to an Indiana University School of Medicine group of researchers and probably startup companies that are commercializing their research. And what's really interesting about the people that they're putting here is that their research area is regenerative medicine, which overlaps nicely with Cook Regentech, whose focus is also regenerative medicine. And this is kind of an example. It was an accident the way that it happened, but it's a happy accident. But it's how we want to try to curate corporations and university activities and other types of activities that are mutually reinforcing and that create a reason for someone to want to be there in this space because of the opportunities to collaborate with people in other companies or universities. But the IBRI is the reason that 16 Tech exists. The IBRI was created by Lilly, Roche Diagnostics, Dow Agra, and some other companies, and they wanted... And this was like John Lechleiter's idea, the former CEO of Lilly, who had the idea of leveraging the IBRI into something even greater. And the something greater was 16 Tech, and to create a true innovation district less than 2 miles from downtown that would become a place of innovation, not just for the IBRI, but for other companies as well. I mentioned our first four buildings and the bridge, which you can see here. We also plan on having a park. You see in the middle a four-acre park, which we've received money from the Lilly Endowment, part of our strategy to bring people out of their companies and interact with each other. We'll have public art. Number six on the map there is the Eskenazi Fine Arts Center. We'll have partnerships with them. They are there at the present time already. As I mentioned, you see Cook Regentech number seven. These are renderings of the first of the three other buildings that Browning has the right to construct. This is the old Citizens Energy Water Company headquarters, where we plan on having co-working space and activities for startups. This is building two, which we hope to break ground on around 2020. It'll be another. The first building is 120,000 square feet that the IBRI is moving into. This building will probably be about the same size. And we have we have letters of intent from two companies, both in the life sciences, that intend to have a presence here. The square footage that they want ranges at a low of end of 20,000 to a high end of 40,000. And we have other companies who are reaching out to us now who are talking to us about locating in here, not just in life sciences, but we have some tech opportunities as well, and then the multifamily. I mentioned that our innovation district plans on having programming for startups, and you can see some of the activities here, incubators, accelerators, co-working, wet labs for life science companies, which Vanessa will talk about, as well as events, parks and trails, cafes. And that is it, and I am out of time. So I believe I am now tasked with introducing Rob Lyles, who is the CEO of Cook Regentech. It's been a great pleasure to get to know Rob in my time here at 16 Tech. He's leading a fantastic initiative. I don't want to say too much about it except to say that it's also a perfect operation to have at 16 Tech because, as Rob will tell you, they are Cook Medical's accelerator, And that's what we want at 16 Tech. We want companies to put accelerator-type activities. And Rob Lyles and Cook Regentech are the urban pioneers at 16 Tech. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay.
Well, good morning, and thank you to Butler for sponsoring us and hosting us today. In just a few brief minutes, wanted to give you a little sense of Regentech. We are there, as Bob said, already in the 16 Tech area, and want to tell you kind of how it plays into our overall innovation strategy and what we're doing there in the area. Just to give you a little bit of just kind of the waterfall, our ultimate purpose, making medicine better. That's what everything ultimately ties back to, why we're getting out of bed and going to work on a Monday morning. We're ultimately trying to make medicine better. To drill down on that, we see a lot of opportunity, and we're very excited at Cook about what's happening with what we call living medicines. This next wave of medicine, what's going to happen in this next 20, 30 years is another complete revolution off of where we've been so far. The idea of taking cells and genes and tissues, things that are actually living, and using those as the medicine itself. It's a revolution. We're just at the beginnings of it, and it's going to change everything. Stepping down from there, what do we do about that? Well, the tools that we've always used at Cook are a combination. We use innovation and entrepreneurial activity. For those of you that aren't as familiar with Cook, Bloomington-based company, 55 years old, a couple of $1 billion in revenue, 12,000 employees, mainly a med tech, med device company. But we also have a life sciences group that we've been working actively in here over the last 20 years. And that's the basic tools that we use. Ultimately, hopefully all of us here, on the life sciences side, what we're after is patient impact. We've got a chance to fundamentally make an impact for humanity, and that's what we're all chasing ultimately. Let me give you a sense of how we do that at Cook Regentech. Here in the middle, you see this is just basically a conceptual model, but it shows kind of how we set ourselves up. We essentially have an internal ecosystem within the company. And what we did is we have a hub of services formed by three companies. We actually have three companies based there out of that building. We call it Cook Regentech, but there's actually two other operating entities that serve us out of there as well. Those serve as a platform that we can attach startups and early stage companies to. We feed them, we nurture them, provide HR, IT, physical space, lab space, whatever they need to get them going. And the ultimate goal that we're after is to create this sustainable ecosystem, even within the company. So I haven't moved outside the company yet, just inside the company, creating an ecosystem where we can host and we can nurture things. For those of you that have associations with bigger companies, one of the challenges that you get with a bigger company is it can tend to, because of all the process that's needed, all the efficiencies that are needed to run big operations, that can be a real threat to innovation. Innovation by its nature is we're going to do it differently than we've done it. And big corporations will tend to rope those things in and say, wait a minute, that's not how you do it. So we got off-site. Our global headquarters is in Bloomington. We are all the way up in Indy. That's purposeful. Get away from the big corporate center. Get people that are like-minded, that are comfortable with that, that are comfortable trying things differently, that want some independence, they want some autonomy because they see some opportunities. That's the basic cocktail that we've had. You can see here the ultimate model is to have an ecosystem, to have the hub that nurtures those startups. Those startups then, early stage companies, can break off and become new Cook companies. Sometimes we will spin those all the way out and make a capital event and an exit and then pump that money back in. So the idea is to create sort of a flywheel that's creating companies, creating opportunities. Again, ultimately all in pursuit of that goal of making a dent in things with living medicines. These are the five early stage ventures that we have so far. We're about 4 years old at this point, so we've got, and I'll show you these here briefly. In total, we've actually got a number of businesses that come together. So when we're out in the world going to cell therapy conferences, regenerative medicine conferences, this is already, just in 4 short years, what we've pulled together. We've been able to bring 12 new products forward. We have about 50 orderable product in our catalog. I only mention that to say the idea of doing these kinds of experiments is, can you get there faster? Can you get technologies that are interesting, potentially disruptive, and can it move faster than the parent organization? And the answer in our case is yes. It's working, and it is creating a lot of value for Cook. Ultimately, though, what we're hoping for is value for patients. So this gives you a sense. We build a lot of tools. We're not a drug company. And so what we got into the space of living medicines, we saw a lot of opportunities to fill in gaps, to bring tools, to bring devices, to help with developing this new area of medicine. And so I won't go into all of these, but just to give you a sense, again, as a parent device company, we, of course, have found some device opportunities. So these are things that either take cells out of the body or deliver cells back into the body. We've already had some world first. That advanced CS catheter there just delivered the world's first triple plasmid for a heart failure patient about 4 weeks ago. So there's world first happening right here out of Indiana, right out of 16 Tech already with these kinds of technologies. We also have come across things like this, which are technologies for filtering. This one you can actually filter blood. We've got and get to a cell population that has therapeutic benefits in certain applications. So we were looking at things like this. This one is actually being looked at by the Department of Defense as well for some different applications. This is one. This is a media cell supplement. So when you get into living medicines and cells, the cells need to grow. You need to fertilize them, essentially. And so there's a lot that goes into this technology. When you read about these gene therapies and cell therapies that are hitting the news now with some of the first approvals here in the United States, all of those in the manufacturing process are sort of 17 steps back from never touching a patient. There's some real needs. Industrializing these technologies, we are, in general, there's a lot of very old technology being used. It's a lot of stuff that any of you that went through grad school, it's the stuff we were working with in grad school 20 and 30 years ago. It's not been modernized. It's not been updated. There's a lot of development and product development opportunities for sort of the background work that goes into a lot of these technologies. This is an example of one that we've had real good success with. This is another one. This is CellSeal. This is a cryogenic vial. Most of these new living therapies, you got to freeze them down at liquid nitrogen temperatures and ship them all over the world in order for them to be viable, and you got to thaw them appropriately. That requires specialized container closure. So again, looking at innovation, bringing sort of a material science background, looking for opportunities and gaps, we were able to come up with this product line, and that is for storing and freezing cells and gene therapies. This one, another cool Indiana story, has made it into outer space. This is the International Space Station. We worked with a company down from the New Albany area, TechShot, and they've got a contract with NASA. You can't see it quite well in this photo, but up there is our CellSeal vial. That is one of the astronauts actually doing stem cell experiments in space with a Cook Regentec product right here from Indiana and 16 Tech. So there's already a lot of good cool stuff going on. This was the picture Bob showed you. This was an earlier rendering, but I just wanted to talk briefly about place. When you go to do these things, our place, this was our old beer warehouse on Indiana Avenue. That's where we started. You got to be innovative. You got to have some vision. So that's where it started. That's where it is today. So we have already been, we've been working hard on that. We bought it in 2014, it is moving along nicely. That's just another view of that that front area if you come by to see us. Inside, collaborative space. Collaboration is a contact sport. This is all about, at the end of the day, it's about human beings coming together and doing something interesting. And so we put a lot of emphasis on that internally, but we also then have made this space so that we can be a good neighbor and a good partner around us. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit about that in the panel meeting. This just gives you a sense of the inside of that old beer warehouse. It's been fully converted now, and it is a place where a lot of innovation's going on. Being in 16 Tech for us is a critical piece. Access to the academic institutions nearby, access to the other corporate partners, that is what makes it so special. Because to come together, you really do need, we were having a discussion at our dinner table in the last several weeks at our house, you know, and I've got teenagers at home, and so you always think about, listen, you know, you are like the five people you hang out with most. So choose your friends wisely. That's the same concept here. Innovation's no different. You're going to become like the five you're hanging out with. You want to hang out with cool, smart, interesting, disruptive people. That's why we came here, is because we see it as a neighborhood where that can happen, and we're real excited about the possibilities of who might move into the neighborhood and play with us. So with that, I'm going to introduce one of my friends that I've met that's we're starting to hatch up some fun possibilities. Vanessa Barth, she's got a great resume you can look at in here, but I'll give her the time. Vanessa.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Vanessa Barth, for some of you who don't know me in the room, and I want to build on a statement that Brian started off with around metaphors, and I think right now I could be the ultimate metaphor in the room for what's going to be 16 Tech District. So, full disclosure, I am employed by Eli Lilly, but I have been placed on loan out to both the organizations of BioCrossroads and the Indiana Biosciences Research Institute. So I look at this as also a commitment for Lilly to really engage in the local ecosystem and kind of get our head out of the sand, get the blinders off, and understand how we can align our goals with those in the community so that we can have win-wins. With that, I'd also like to give a special thanks out to Jay McGill, who was kind enough to trust me to get up here on stage and present my perspective on IBRI, and also to Mark Kraft, who was kind enough to share some of the slides he had pulled together representing the organization. So just to start, I'm going to give you a little bit of historical framing about why the IBRI, and I think what you're going to see through this story is the opportunity to take something that started back in that gap between 2002 and 2015 and understand why 16 Tech District makes so much sense. It's really a scaling play on something that's already going very, very well. So I don't know how many of you in the audience are familiar with the Battelle Report referenced up here that BioCrossroads helped commission. I'm serious. Participation counts. Show of hands. Is anyone familiar with the Battelle Report? That's pretty darn good. So the idea was that Indiana has a lot going for it. We had some real strengths in the life sciences. And that span across a number of different sectors, including ag. We have the traditional life sciences. We also had some things going on in orthopedics. And we had these all sprinkled throughout the state. And in their individual selves, they were doing great. But the question was, how could we do better? So at Lilly, and I think a lot of the organizations, we think about a SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So we definitely have some strengths. And with that comes some opportunity. So how can we play larger than ourselves? So the concept of the gestalt. So getting the sum of the pieces to be greater than those individual components. And I think that is exactly the direction that 16 Tech District is hoping to build on. With that being said, in order to transcend the impact of these individual organizations out in the community, we had to learn some new behaviors. And so what this report highlighted was we needed to collaborate more. There were opportunities for academia, for industry, to come together and to start thinking about how we do things differently, to get diverse perspectives around the table to solve problems, yes, in the business world, but also in the community. So how can we make that tide rise and get all those boats to kind of float a little bit higher? And I really think that IBRI and the 16 Tech District are aimed at that, both scientifically and from a community impact perspective. So as we think about those opportunities or threats, we don't want to lose what we've already built here. So how do we continue to maintain and build? That's going to come in the form of value creation. And when we think about different ways of creating value, I like to think about it first and foremost as people. So how do we attract and maintain talent here? And I think that's one of the key emphasis on 16 Tech District is that we want to attract and retain a diverse population that covers all demographics and is inclusive of all the communities around us. We also want to reinvest dollars into the community, and standing up here kind of IBRI and Lilly is how do we put money back into research? How do we collaborate in the local community? And I think one of the examples that IBRI has already initiated is the Diabetes Center of Excellence, which is really bridging academia, IU, as well as Lilly with an independent research institute. And that's going to build on expertise that are already in the community around diabetes, bring in new, diverse talent with different perspectives and different skills, and help us reinvest dollars in the community to do new, novel research that may make breakthroughs for the community from a health perspective. So you can see the IBRI has really been positioned to fill this gap between these different sectors. And then you can think about this in so far as the 16 Tech District is how do we bring more sectors into play? So it's great if we're doing this in the life sciences, but when we look all around us, you look at your Apple Watches, you think about your phones, how many steps have you gotten today? How do we start to get technology and life sciences to intersect so that we can continue to provide new solutions and advances that are going to generate businesses, generate impact on community health, and again, continue to grow the local ecosystem? So it's not just a life sciences play. The play is how do we take the sectors we have our strengths in, engineering, technology, life sciences, and bring them together? Yes, they're sprinkled around the state, but when you hear these C words about collaborate, catalyze, collide, the way to get that done is to be next to one another, to be near each other. And we've seen that work in lots of different geographies. It's not just large cities. When you think about your classrooms, when you think about going out to dinner with your friends, when you think about the conversations you have in your co-working spaces, when you go home at the end of the day, where did you get the most value? It's usually in those interactions that you maybe planned for or that you didn't plan for. And that's what this district is providing, the opportunity to collide, to take risks and think about doing things differently. So why is the IBRI unique? These C words keep popping up. So the ability to connect, the ability to collaborate, to complement, to catalyze and convene. We all want to do these things, but the truth of the matter is we don't make them primary. So Lily, for instance, and even Cook, we do have a focus that sometimes limits our vision of bringing other people, other players in. And this is why IBRI is very unique. They are looking to say, you over there, there's something in common. And it also builds on our interests. How do we pull them together? How do we get them to collide? How do we get them to move in a new direction that, quite frankly, none of them are thinking of until they come together and start to have those conversations? So it's not just what we do, it's how we do it. And I think that that is something that can resonate with everyone in the room. You can go to work, you can have a certain type of day. But when you start to think outside of the box, when you start to bring these types of behaviors into play, it gets you moving and thinking differently, and it gets you having more diverse perspectives, again, in the room trying to solve problems. And that's, again, where IBRI is coming in. How do you pull all these different intellectual verticals together in the 16-tech district? And doing so, they're going to have the co-working space. They're going to have an open lab space where folks can come in, take their ideas, and make them real. You can sit there and you can dream, but there's a big difference of getting in the lab and getting your hands on and starting to make things happen. And on top of that, they also have the individuals who can help guide you, coach you. And that's another thing we have in our community that we haven't quite yet leveraged, is this idea of bringing together mentors and coaches to help move ideas forward, to pull some of those technologies and ideas out so that we can commercialize them and start new companies. And then lastly, because I know I'm out of time, but one thing that resonates and rings true for myself is values. And I think the values that IBRI exemplifies match quite well with the 16-tech district as well as with the state of Indiana. So when we think about not just what we do again, but how we do it, I think this is what's going to make IBRI a fantastic life sciences anchor at the 16-tech district. And they're going to be looking to pull other anchor tenants in to play with partners that you may not have thought of. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Melissa Beckwith, who's with our hosting institution, Butler. She is the Vice President of Strategy and Innovation, and she has a fantastic resume that is in the pamphlet that you can dig into in more detail.
Thank you. Thank you, and good morning. Welcome to Butler. Thanks for visiting our beautiful campus this morning. So as Brian and I were talking about this morning's session a bit, I said, you know, unlike Regentech and unlike IBRI, Butler does not yet have or have a vision for what an established presence at 16-tech would be. So where do we want to focus the talk this morning? I think there's two areas. One is, what are we doing as it relates to innovation within higher education? And then two, how could an innovation district like 16-tech be part of that process? And so let's start from a couple of perspectives. Innovation within higher education, I'll bucket into two different categories. One, what are we doing to apply and create innovation within higher education? And then secondly, how are we getting outside of our campus? And how are we actually plugging in as an institution into this great innovation ecosystem happening in our backyard, less than 10 minutes down the road as it relates to 16-tech? And so if we think about those for a second, innovation within higher education, we're not unlike every single one of you in the room that comes from an organization that is facing challenging dynamics, right? And this threat of disruption. And what are the changes happening around us? And that's no different than, again, what we're facing. If you think about higher education and some of those dynamics that continue to get even, you know, attention nationally and from a media perspective, costs. Costs being one. You know, Rob's here going to do a tour with his son today. They're going to talk about cost. There is a very real piece to that, and that we realize even as Butler that we're at a price point that does prohibit individuals from coming to Butler. And so cost is one disruptor that we're looking at, and it's interesting as you watch on the fringes of education what's happening related to substitutes that are offering not degrees but alternative ways to get a higher education experience that are addressing the cost straight on, right? And why they might be on the fringes now, they may not be in 5 or 10 years from now. So, you know, that's a big piece. Second is just the changing demographics of the students that are coming into the higher education environment right now. In terms of what they want, you know, you hear a lot about Gen Z. I'm already kind of looking at Alpha Generation, right? They're 4 years old. They spend 80% of their day on technology. There are such different expectations of what individuals want out of a higher ed experience, how they consume technology, what they think about community, how they expect personalized learning experiences, right? So that does create dynamics for us. And then, as many of you know, sitting in the room, being part of organizations, the talent piece is such a big component of what we're looking at. How do we get more talent? How do we get the talent we need? How do we change and continue to educate our talent with the skill sets not only needed for today but tomorrow and down the road? So just some of the dynamics that we're looking at as it relates to what we need to do in higher education. And so as we think about innovation, the way I typically describe this is there are two pieces, and you heard both Rob and Vanessa allude to this, but there's innovation within the core model. So if you think about Butler for a second, right, we are a primarily undergrad, residential, selective, highly experiential type of a university. And we do things in that way very, very well. And there's some innovations that we need to continue to employ to bring that forward and stay competitive. Yet at the same time, that core model that we offer, as you can imagine, is an expensive model to offer, right? And it's a business model that we need to be continually thinking, what are the new programs we can bring to market? What are the new business models that we can bring to market that complement what we're doing in our core, but that can generate new revenue, it can meet new audiences, it can deliver education maybe differently in a way that continues to sustain Butler long term. So we think about two different ways of going about more sustaining innovation and transformational innovation. So, you know, with that, well, how does a 16 tech or an innovation district help in some ways with both paths, both what we do in our core and what we could be doing or how we should be thinking about what we can do outside of our core? And so a couple of things that we've been talking about in early stage, and again, all these ideas I'm throwing out are in the spirit of, since we're in a room on innovation, the ideation stage. We've not yet solidified any relationship yet with how we would engage with 16 Tech. But as we think about it, I think there are a number of ways that that relationship can help. For example, I mean, experiential education, if you think about the core of Butler's model, a highly experiential education model. Over 95% of our students do some sort of experiential education opportunity, whether that's 6 month co-ops, whether that's internships, whether it's, you know, research here on campus or research abroad. We do a lot in that area, but that requires partnerships. That requires a tremendous amount of collaboration between a university and outside partners. And so as I start to think about the types of companies that have already committed to 16 Tech, the types of companies they're looking to draw in, and types of research organizations they're looking to draw in, these are the types of organizations and companies we want to put our students with, right? They're going to offer some amazing opportunities. So experiential learning is a natural way, I think, that we can see some partnerships between university and 16 Tech. I think the other one that I just quickly will point out is insights. So this, again, goes to what else do we need to do as a university, both in our core model and outside of our core model, to sustain Butler for the long term? As all of you know, right, insights drive innovation. We can't get insights into what's happening around us if we only stay on campus. And so, again, back to, we've talked about casual collisions. I always use the word, I like the word engineered serendipity, right? So if we are out at an institution or at an area like 16 Tech, we are naturally picking up on insights from the leading edge companies that are going to be out there. We're looking at how are they applying technology? What skill sets do they need for the future? Are they defining career paths that don't even exist today? And so those insights we can bring back to a university and say, how do we use those to influence our undergraduate, maybe curriculum or new programs? But also, how can we get creative in supplying our own new product development, if you will, in the creation of certificates, micro-credentials, customized corporate training, right? What are those other offerings that we can develop as an institution that meet the insights that we get from the companies that are out at 16 Tech? So those insights help us drive and move forward with what are our new offerings that we want to create as Butler. So there's a lot of, I think, value I can see, and we can see that Butler would get out of a partnership with 16 Tech. But the other side of how we're looking at this, it's what is the value that we offer back to an innovation district? Again, back to the concept of how do we plug in and support the innovation ecosystem, not just take from it. And so there are a number of thoughts around that. And again, it's great that this is in such close proximity to Butler's campus, because there are so many things that we do on campus today that we naturally are saying, can we use an extension? Can 16 Tech be an extension of our own campus? And what I mean by that is, can we take some of the things like our programming that we do, diversity lecture series, our arts programming, a number of the programming that we do around a program called Community Innovate, right? Can we take these programs that we're naturally already doing and take them down to a 16 Tech? Because one of the things that's really attractive to us is how they're not just looking at growing startups or creating innovation accelerators for corporations, but how they are fostering this whole spirit of place and the whole spirit of community around the actual district. And so as you think about that, how do we extend our programming? How do we extend the things that we do to increase the value of place at 16 Tech? So programming is one. I think about services, at services lightly is another. You know, we have some great offerings between Butler Business Consulting Group and the Center for Closely Held Business that help scale companies and grow companies and consult with companies. We also have amazing opportunities that we already do today, such as, you know, if maybe you're aware, we run two IPS schools as Butler Lab Schools. We do collaborations between our pharmacy and health sciences and IU pharmacy program to serve medical needs in underserved communities in Indianapolis, right? We do a lot of things already from a community perspective, naturally, that we're also saying, okay, how can we take this and think about it again differently and applying it to the place and the community? Because inherently, if we do that and we plug into the ecosystem that's happening out at 16 Tech in that way, we are receiving value from that that's driving some of our other innovative efforts here at Butler. So I'm also out of time. But thank you very much. And at this point, I think I want to turn it back over to Brian.
There you go. Yep.
So thanks to the four of you for providing some additional explanations and thoughts on 16 Tech, as well as how it's going to integrate within your organizations. What I'd like to do is to call up our speakers and go through a few questions, and then we'll field some questions and comments from the audience. So if I could get you guys to jump back up here, that'd be great. So these guys have done an amazing job of getting a lot of information out in a short amount of time. And so we've got plenty of time for questions, and I look forward to the input from our audience here, because I think that's one of the most important parts of today. So I'm going to go through here. Bob, you kicked it off. You're the president of 16 Tech. And the question I'd like to ask you to kind of start with is, how is 16 Tech going to kind of drive innovation or drive these collisions between industries? Because we've talked a lot about life sciences, but I want to make sure that some of these discussions that you're having internally, you know, really touch on IT. So I want to make sure that as we think about that, what is some of the programming? What is some of the facilities? What are the ideas that you guys are putting in motion to increase those cross-sectional collaborative opportunities?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, my understanding is that one of the platforms at IBRI that is very active, maybe among the most active, is in data analytics. And I think I see Dan sitting there who oversees data analytics. Data analytics is obviously IT. The IBRI's focus in this area is around the life science needs in data analytics. Just yesterday, I met with a potential tenant who is not in the life sciences sector. I can't speak in specifics about this tenant, but it's in a different industry, and it's in the, I would put it in the entertainment industry. His focus is data analytics, the analysis of consumer tastes and behaviors that he hopes to be able to monetize. It's a collaboration involving a number of different companies around the country. And as he was telling me about his business model, he did say to me, you know, my understanding is that 16 Tech is largely a bioscience center, and I used the IBRI's data analytics activities as an example of the intersection, and he got it immediately. I think that's how we'll do it. It's very clear that the intersection of technology is already top of mind for most people and most corporations. And once you describe what we're doing, they get it and they get excited about the opportunity to collaborate with people doing similar work in other industries.
Okay, great. Well, Rob, we're going to keep going down the. We're going to jump back to you. What I like about Cooper Gentech, their website is from concept to commercialization. That's, I think, perfect for what 16 Tech is trying to encourage. So that was exciting. Cooper Gentech, it came up, is a separate company, mm-hmm. and. I think that is definitely new from my understanding of the historical part about Cook. You know, it's really been run from Bloomington. It's just an amazing company we're all very proud to have here. But can you talk a little bit about why Cook Regentech is a separate company specifically, and how you touched on innovation and getting outside of those walls impacted your decision. So can you kind of just elaborate a little bit more? We didn't give you enough time. I want to make sure we get back to that.
Yeah, sure. So part of my background within Cook, had responsibility for one of the large divisions for about a decade. And with that, had a lot of resource, had a lot of great, very talented R&D folks, you know, big global company with a lot of muscle to it. But when I looked across at the innovation and when we kind of scorecard ourselves and we think about our, you know, Cook's got a rich history, a lot of innovation, 16,000 products, 50 years on. So, I mean, we got a lot of innovation going on. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't disruptive enough. It wasn't novel enough. It wasn't aligned with where we saw some trends and some future going. And so as we started to go about that, I did what you do when you're in the big company. And so you double down and you have, you know, special programs and you put special people on it, but it was all in the context of that construct. And what I noticed over time was it still just wasn't producing the results that we wanted. It wasn't really aligned because it was inside the big company to work with outside organizations because it's sort of, you know, you're sort of within the heart of the big organization. There's a lot of the family jewels are in there. You're protecting everything. It's very closed off. It makes it very hard to collaborate with outside firms. So that was one area that we didn't have much access to. And as we went through that, there was just some other dynamics that I started to wonder about. So I looked around Cook and I thought, where are we doing some stuff that's really surprising and really interesting? And what I found is the commonalities were anywhere that we had created an atmosphere for people where they had focus and they had autonomy and they, relatively speaking, had a fair amount of empowerment, good stuff was happening. Now, most big companies, the way that you create that, unfortunately, is crisis. Usually it's when something's going wrong. What's the first thing you do? You go, oh, forget about everything else. That's important. What do? You get a talented team and you say, do that, do nothing else. You're empowered to make the decisions. Just fix that problem. That was some of the most innovative work I saw going on in Cook was, you know, just the internal fires that come up where you got to, you know, kind of marshal resources. So we took that principle and we said, what if we took that and deliberately just created that outside the company? What if we took and stepped aside, we deliberately tried to create an ecosystem and environment where it had autonomy and focus and empowerment? And as we had gone through this, we'd made this decision. We were moving down the path, and we were out. One of the big things in the life science sector is this J.P. Morgan meeting out in San Francisco every year, and sort of the whole industry shows up. And so we were out at J.P. Morgan, and Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, has sort of a CEO lunch thing that he does, and he gets on the stage and shares his wisdom. And innovation came up, and he said, listen, he goes, all you CEOs and presidents out there, he said, you've all got your program, President's Special Innovation Initiative. And he said, let me tell you something. He said, none of them work. He said, I've done it too. He said, none of them work. He said, let me tell you the only thing I've ever found that works. Take somebody you trust, throw them outside the company, give them whatever they ask for, and they'll bring good stuff back. And I was sitting next to our present CEO, the guy that runs all of Cook, a guy named Pete Yonkman, and Pete kind of elbows me, and I elbow him. And I'm like, I guess that's kind of what we're doing. So that's really how we came up with how do we do this outside. Is Cook still doing amazing innovation as a corporation? Absolutely. It's got an incredible, impeccable record of doing that. But to do the kinds of things we're doing, trying to align to different, you know, in the language up here, verticals, different things that are going on, a device company trying to find how to provide value in a revolution that's going on in life sciences, some of those activities I firmly believe are best served. You got to get away from the mothership. You got to get out there where you can kind of do your thing and give people some latitude, leave them alone, and they do produce some really neat results.
Yeah, it's really neat. I mean, Cook has been so innovative for such a long time. You have the firsts in several different types of device classes. Obviously, has focused even on Cook Biotech and other things outside of its core mission. But the fact that they have had the forward-thinking and kind of progressive way to take this outside, and we're really addressing it outside of our core med device area, I think is really a exciting way, and clearly shows that they see the future is in other things. They don't want to be stuck in just the traditional model. So, you know, last month we were really blessed to have Lilly come here, and they talked in a lot of detail about artificial intelligence and what Lilly was doing within the pharmaceutical industry and their specific, not only internal operations, but then kind of looking outside of what they were doing, very specific examples, which was great because AI, to me, is still kind of nebulous. But they put a lot of specificity behind that. And so that made me really think about, and as a person who hears a little bit more about what's going on with IBRI than maybe the average person, what I've been surprised to observe is the level of activity that there is in their data analytics core. If you were to look on the IBRI website, Dan Robertson and his team are highlighted. And maybe, Vanessa, if you could talk a little bit, maybe playing off of how Lilly is really leveraging IT, and not just leveraging IT to, you know, to get products to market faster or to do the fancier gadget, but specifically to solve these really complicated problems. I'm sorry, I'm kind of drifting here. Can you talk about how the data analytics and a core at IBRI is really some of the projects they're working on and how they're addressing the collaborative needs of the stakeholders there?
Sure. So just starting with framing with Lilly and data analytics, so we had a lovely conversation around artificial intelligence. In order to pursue that route or the idea of machine learning, what you have to be able to do is wrangle all that data together. How do you merge data sets? How do you bring them together for new learnings? At Lilly, one of the comments Rob made was the mothership. It's complicated. There's lots of silos. Everybody's on a different platform in a different system. And how do you get data in a format where you can bring it all together? And that's very important so that you can begin to visualize the data, glean insights, and also remove biases. So the ability to look at data without some of the different perspective, which is valuable, that you sometimes bring to the table. If you look at Dan Robertson's group, he has collaborated across multiple pharma companies within the same team or project. And so Dan has really taken his group to the next level by being able to access data and bring companies to the table where he's able to find a pre-competitive space where we can all learn and gain from the insights that that data provides. And that provides value for IBRI. It provides value for all the companies at the table. And hopefully those insights and learnings provide value back to the community, especially in the area of diabetes. From a non-science perspective, just thinking about the 16 tech district, this idea of how do you bring your data together to empower decision-making in an efficient fashion spans all companies. So I think there's a real big opportunity from a data analytics perspective to impact a lot of the corporations in the community, be they small and agile or larger and slightly slower. There is a real opportunity to do things more efficiently, have more impact, and then ultimately share more data. So unfortunately, I think Dan is going to be swamped out of his mind, especially in the 16 tech district.
To the extent that it's public, can you talk a little bit more about, like, I know there's maybe some public health projects and some other things, to the extent that you could be a little more specific about something that would be, you know, a real great example of how those IT and analytics capabilities are helping the companies there, to the extent it's...
Sure. So I think this is more future looking, but I think folks have heard of announcements around the Diabetes Impact Project. And so that is Lilly's hope to move into the community, partner with the community, let the community drive how to bring resources around addressing the issue of diabetes and the fact that it's not just a scientific problem around diet, but there's a lot of other social variables that impact one's ability to manage or prevent diabetes. And as those community projects move forward, there could be a real opportunity to look at those data, bring them together across the communities, and think about how we could make a play at the state level for improving our quality of life and quality of health. In turn, that's going to make it a much more attractive ecosystem for bringing other companies to the table to stay in play because it's going to cost less to be here, and the quality of life is going to be what they envision for their families. Mm-hmm. So I know that one's not tangible, but it's one I'm very excited about, so I'm leveraging my platform to bring that up because I think it's a
okay,
good thing.
Okay, there you go. That's fine. So speaking of being able to leverage your platform and your home court here, Melissa, so it's exciting that as a Butler alum to see and also just for the school and for the city that Butler was ranked the most innovative university when the rankings came out last week for U.S. News and World Report and really ranked as being the most innovative university. So in the spirit of that, thinking about that, can you give us kind of a few examples of how you've worked with some of these companies that folks in the room may not know about, IT, et cetera, and kind of how that would play into or kind of an example of how that type of collaborative work or maybe even something that is unknown to the audience would kind of impact 16 Tech. So kind of this element of kind of what are examples of co-creation, things that you've brought to market, because I know you've been doing some interesting things behind the scenes.
Yeah. So happy to give a couple of examples. And it's interesting, I'm always interested in rankings, you know, these rankings that come out. I don't know how much of these unknown things play in or play don't play into the rankings. But from one example was talking about insights earlier, and one of the ways or one of the insights that we had to our student population is that at Butler, it's not about getting students engaged. These students are over-engaged. It's about getting them engaged in the right activity because they are so over-programmed and they are just, you know, go-getters. So one of the things that we were trying to determine was how do we get students engaged in the right types of activities that lead to a successful and an engaging experience at Butler? And at the same time, how do we do that in the mechanism by which they interact and communicate, which is their phone? Okay, because we did a kind of an ethnographic study, and we watched how students were walking across campus, right? And not, they're all like this. None of them are looking up except when they get the stop sign so they don't get hit. And so one of the things that we talked about was, okay, we had been talking internally for probably at least I'd been heard about the conversation for 2.5 years about how do we create something mobily that would help our students get engaged, right? And it continued to, I mean, to your points earlier, we continued to kind of talk and think about it and come up with various ideas. We happened to decide to co-create and go outside and collaborate with High Alpha as part of an engagement where at the end of the day, what we ended up co-creating was a company and product together that launched out of High Alpha called Clear Scholar. And so together we brought the product to market, but it did so in a way that actually our students drove the design process. So while our IT teams here at Butler provided some variable support, High Alpha teams provided some support, it was our students at Butler that actually helped design what it is that we're trying to achieve. And on the back end, we were very cognizant of what's the data that we want to gather so that we, at the end of the day, we can serve up the right content at the right times and get them engaged in the right experiences across campus and off campus that are what they need specifically as an individual person based on some of that data. And so we had a very successful kind of project. We used 100 students to launch it. We have, I think, like 98% adoption from a student perspective now. Our entire student body is using it. We're looking at how we extend it to faculty and staff. Alumni, right, so that we can also begin to gather that data, and prospective students, so that we begin to gather that data across the entire life cycle, communicate to people where they are. The other nice part of it, it didn't just solve a need that we had at Butler. It was an opportunity for us to test a co-creation model in technology that worked out really well for us, and we will be doing more of those. Mm-hmm. And we were actually lucky to be a partner in their exit as they sold it to Civitas, which is then that co-creation piece is now leading to a number of additional opportunities with Civitas as a large data company for higher education specifically. A number of other now co-creation opportunities where we'll be able to help develop products, but also use that product internally to support our students, but also then help market and take it out to other higher ed institutions on behalf of Civitas and ClearScholar.
So really kind of an idea that if we think about 16 Tech, having an IT startup being partially spun out by a university is exactly the kind of out-of-the-box, really new, cool idea that sounds like to be the things that we'd want to have at 16 Tech. Bob, I'm going to swing back to you for a minute because we had a great update on 16 Tech. I know that there's been lots of discussions and planning, and I know you're starting to move into the phase of getting more specific. Can you talk a little bit? I know 16 Tech is going to be, it's not going to be buildings. It's not going to be just facilities. It's going to be really a lot about people and really a lot about programming. And I was just curious if you could kind of talk a little bit about the programming ideas. They may be firm ideas. They may just be pie in the sky at this time. But can you talk a little bit about the programming that you're planning on considering and potentially putting into place? Because I know it's going to be an important part of making 16 Tech successful.
Sure. So the programming that we're developing is focused on innovation, obviously. We want to provide innovation services not only to established companies but to startups. So we've been working for quite some time now with the IBRI and Jay McGill sitting back there to define the role that the IBRI will play in providing services to life science startups. One point I want to make is that 16 Tech may itself not be the organization that delivers all of these services and all of this programming. But we do want to curate and partner with other organizations that may already be providing programming. So IBRI will probably take the lead in providing services to life science startups that might be spinning out of the IU School of Medicine, for example, through mentoring programs as well as access to shared equipment to do their scientific work. Another example would be BioCrossroads itself. So, and the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. The CICP, which I think many of you know represents the CEOs of the largest corporations in Central Indiana, just announced earlier this week that it's going to be relocating to 16 Tech. So what does that mean for 16 Tech? Well, the organizations that are part of the CICP are BioCrossroads, which focuses on the life sciences and has a seed fund. Kinexus, which focuses on manufacturing. Ascend, which is a talent attraction program. Agrinovis, which is focused on ag tech. ESN, which is focused on advanced energy systems. Mm-hmm. All of these collaborative organizations, which involve the corporations across in Central Indiana and in some cases across the state, will be relocating at 16 Tech. Over the next 5 years, they're projected to employ about 150 people. So these are significant organizations that themselves offer programming that's specific to their industries. So that's another way that collaboration and programming that will be offered. And then we want to have a makerspace at 16 Tech. Makerspace is used by companies and individuals to develop prototypes largely that will be manufactured could be in medical devices, it could be in other industries. And Rolls-Royce in particular has been a company in town that would like to have a maker space that their engineers could get access to go over and tinker and innovate. So we have a business model right now for a makerspace that we're working through within the very early stages.
Okay.
And then lastly, we've entered into an arrangement with an organization based in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., called 1776, which is co-working and incubator activities. And they are in the process right now of putting together a feasibility study for us to have a presence at 16 Tech to manage the co-working space and also to offer programming, not only to startups, but they also offer programming to larger established companies to help them source innovation to address their specific needs. So we are in the process right now of working with them on a feasibility study that should be finished around November of this year.
Okay, great.
Emily Kruger is sitting back there, our COO. Did I forget anything? All right. Okay, thank you.
All right, so I got makerspace, incubation, seed funding, and...
I'll add one more thing. There is a MedTech accelerator that's under develop right now in Indianapolis that is independent and is also interested in having a presence at 16 Tech.
Okay.
So I think what we are doing is building the platform at 16 Tech that independent organizations will want to plug into, and we want to make it as easy as possible for them to do that.
Great. Rob, I'll throw one more out at you real quickly. You know, when, as this new organization, totally fresh, outside of the core company, why did you choose Indianapolis? I mean, I know that we're talking about 16 Tech here, but I'd like to just more broadly say, you know, why Indianapolis versus maybe a bigger region elsewhere, or maybe just Bloomington itself?
Yeah. It's a little history on Cook. Bloomington is our global corporate headquarters. We also have a big presence in West Lafayette, so very active in the state for 55 years, and until we moved in here, we had never been to Indianapolis in terms of a presence or a company or an entity. And, you know, as we were looking, we actually predated some of the timeline Bob put up there. We were actually active in the area as early as 2012 and actually bought that building that we refurbed in 2014. So we were making decisions even ahead of some of the vision around 16 Tech crystallizing, but it's interesting because a lot of the things we based that decision on sort of came true and are coming to fruition within 16 Tech, which is why we've been such enthusiastic supporters of the whole 16 Tech concept. And that is, number one, just location relative to a lot of really interesting, not sound too corporate, but sort of assets. I mean, the fact that IU School of Medicine, largest medical school in the country, most people don't know that. It is right there. So when you're in 16 Tech, you're right across the street. So large academic medical institution availability. The other institutions in the state, we have long and deep relationships with a lot of the institutions around the state. So, you know, not only Butler, but Rose Holman out in Terre Haute, Notre Dame, all of that, getting to that central part of the state starts to open up because people come to Indianapolis a lot more than they come to Bloomington. So there's just a traffic pattern that starts to create some opportunities. The changing of the workforce, and we haven't touched on it much this morning, but when I think about possibilities between like what we're doing and Butler and others, workforce development is huge and access to talent, which you've heard mentioned up here. For us, coming to Indianapolis, you've probably heard the observation or read in articles, you know, millennial generation, and they like to live downtown, and they like to be in urban environments, and they're not necessarily just going to go live out in the burbs and commute in and all that stuff. We found that to be very, very true. We are about 65 to 70% millennials at our place, about 90 total employees. We had some of those younger folks that even were employed in Bloomington as we formed this. As soon as they found this was happening, they immediately moved to Indianapolis. They wanted to be in that more urban environment. And so when you sort of start stacking all that together, academic institutions and the possibilities, and especially, you know, Butler and others being so close, that's a big deal. Having access to young talent is a big deal. Having other employers, Lilly and others, so close in the environment and again, very altruistic in their outlook and trying to really build a community that aligns with our values very well. But that creates workforce and innovation possibilities that just don't exist otherwise. So a lot of those core attributes that said, yeah, Indianapolis is going to make a lot of sense even before 16 Tech had crystallized, as 16 Tech started to crystallize, it just kind of kept checking every box that we had that had brought us there in the first place. So it's very good alignment on that.
Mm-hmm. And really setting yourself up for success based on some of the demographic and secular and business trends that you're going through. Well, I want to say one last thing before we start getting some feedback from the audience. I think that I'd like to highlight that, again, Bob had said CICP is going to be moving to 16 Tech. And I think that's really going to add to the vibrancy out there, because if you think about some of the things that 16 Tech does through its organization, so TechPoint does an amazing amount of programming, and it's really valuable. They have a lot of things they're doing each week. They do their extern program. They do support the OAR Fellowship. So they're going to be bringing talent out to 16 Tech that may not otherwise see it if they were somewhere else. BioCrossroads does a variety of things, including has a seed fund. We're hoping that we could have other partners like an Elevate or like Vision Tech join us out there. No pressure, Oscar. And then, if you think of Ascend, to some of you may be new, but it's a workforce initiative that's been very specific about trying to match up supply and demand as it relates to employees and employers. So I think there's a lot, while we're not in the lab doing things, I think there's going to be a lot of things that CICP is going to bring to the table to help continue to build that stew and get people colliding and out there and thinking. So we've got a few minutes. I would love to get some questions, some comments from folks. I see a lot of stakeholders here in different ways, so would love to open it up. Oh, hold on, you got to speak into the mic. But yes.
Good morning. I have a question, actually two questions for Vanessa. Vanessa, can you share with me who funded the Battelle study? And then secondly, what is the role of non-academic health systems and even independent physicians or physicians groups with IBRI?
All right, so I'll do the first question first. So with regards to the Battelle report, it definitely preceded my paying attention to the external local ecosystem, but my impression was that that was taken care of through BioCrossroads, and BioCrossroads has a number of financial supporters as well. But I believe that all the folks who have invested in BioCrossroads felt like the report was the right thing to do, and so that was how that was managed. Could you repeat your second question around the independent physicians?
Yeah, the question is, what is the role, current or maybe even future, the role of non-academic health systems and independent physicians or physician groups in the IBRI?
Wow. I think that could take a couple different directions. I guess I would think it'd be, for me, it would be more from a collaboration perspective on how do you get science done and how do you connect the preclinical ideas to the patient. And so I think there is probably a really nice opportunity to weave together your preclinical scientists and those who are practicing and interacting with the patient. At Lilly, we're trying to go from end to end, but you can imagine that in a really large company, you can get bogged down. It's very difficult to have line of sight across that entire value chain. With diabetes being a real emphasis and its complications at the IBRI, I would envision that they have those types of conversations and collaborations going on right now as they start to think about what are the type of talent they want to attract and retain, both at their current campus as well as the campus that will be located at the district. But I also invite Dan Robertson and or Jay McGill to add to my answer. I totally think I caught you off guard. I apologize. That's my vision after 8 months.
No, thanks. You know, we have a number of discussions ongoing and partnerships with a number of the non-academic health systems, community, Parkview, to name a few. And they are focused in today around the acquisition of data or how data is used in healthcare implementation in within their systems. And so that's where we're at today. We are engaging in conversations with through our partnership with Notre Dame into other healthcare systems outside of those of Central Indiana. We have been started a collaboration with healthcare systems in Chicago, actually, to identify a more diverse population of health medical records to complement those that we're gathering from Indiana, to that can be used in our data analytics, and both with our corporate partners as well as with our academic partners. So,
I thought that was a great question, because obviously life sciences, tech, et cetera, they're here to serve the patient, and the hospital is where that's going to happen. So having those partners, I know there's discussions, Eskenazi's, I know not exactly what you're asking about, but they're on the board. So there's active discussions, and I know clinical trial recruitment from all those institutions for specific companies that wind up there will be important. So I'm sorry, please add some other questions.
So following up on the question there, pharmacists are at the center of this complex world that the Texas Dean is focused on creating, because they are delivers of safe and effective therapy, whether it be a pill or whether it be a cell, like Cook Group Cook is doing. And it has to be affordable. So pharmacists are, I can afford to see my pharmacist. I have to pay $500 to see a clinician. That's how much it's complex. So this environment that you are creating creates a possibility to connect to healthcare systems, to connect to Cook, to work, be innovative, and place Butler students, pharmacies, one of the best pharmacies in the nation, put them in Tech 16 to train them with the health systems, with the hospital, to deliver safe and effective and monitoring therapy, cell-based therapy. Why not do that? Create the job that doesn't exist today.
I'll jump on that. So I went to the healthcare think-a-thon that was sponsored by the CTSI. I believe it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. I apologize. But as we started to think about innovation, one of the topics that came up was that the role the pharmacist plays and where they're currently located is going to be obsolete in a few years. It's not that they're going away. It's the idea that their role in the healthcare system is going to evolve to be working side by side with physicians, nurse practitioners, et cetera, and that the actual dispensing of the medication is something that can be automated. It's going to be the patient interaction and understanding complex data sets and helping provide insights and guidance on the types of medications that should be administered and what combinations should be avoided. So I concur with your statement, and I think there's a lot of opportunity to evolve in that space.
And if I might jump on that, I think, back to some of the things I was saying earlier, too, about the value of us being at 16 Tech is that insight piece, right? So if we see this happening, it allows us to come back and say, how do we retool our curriculum or our experiences that we're offering our students so that we are preparing them for a little bit more of this unknown piece that isn't what they deliver or the way they deliver it today? So
another interesting tidbit, at Lilly, some of our most successful folks from a career trajectory perspective have a pharmacy background, and they enter into the clinical trial design, development, and implementation space. So they have a really unique lens or view that different scientists or components of the company find highly valuable. So I think going again to your comment, there's going to be a lot of change in that space, and it's very exciting, and that the district would provide the place and the people to have that conversation and maybe pilot some things together across academia and industry working through IBRI.
That's right.
Question for Bob. Do you envision 16 Tech having a relationship with the recently announced Sports Tech Accelerator?
Yes, we do.
Because I'm thinking, especially if the focus of the company is wearables, for instance.
Right.
That there could be a great deal of potential.
Yeah, there. Yeah. No, we expect to, very much so.
Bob, just in case other folks in the audience don't know, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
That accelerator that has been mentioned?
Yes.
Or announced?
I don't know how many of you have heard of what's now an international organization called TechStars. Yeah, many of you have. So Indianapolis is in the unique position now of having two TechStar accelerators in Indianapolis. Both were recently announced. One is focused on sports technology, and that was announced a few weeks ago. And the location of that accelerator is very close to 16 Tech. In fact, if you go back and read the article, Ryan Vaughn, who's leading that initiative, specifically said that in the article that they plan on being at 16 Tech. That's really exciting. And then the second TechStars accelerator is associated with the Heritage Group. The Heritage Group is a large conglomerate focused on material sciences and, help me out, Emily, other transportation,
construction.
And so they have engaged TechStars to source innovation that's of interest to their businesses from around the world. And they've also announced that they're going to be investing $50 million a year out of off their balance sheet in these types of companies. So that's really good news for our region. And it's an example of how large companies are attempting to source innovation from startups. And it's a trend that I think is not only taking place here, but around the country and the world.
Mm-hmm. Got one back here.
Good morning. We are a small startup that works at another one of the co-working spaces in Indianapolis on the northeast side.
Mm-hmm.
We're a bit of a misfit up there because we're life science focused. So this question's for Bob. You know, what steps would we need to go through to explore space at, you know, the current or future 16 Tech?
I would contact Jay McGill, sitting right over there. You can contact me, too. But Jay McGill, do you want to answer that, Jay? You've already talked to him? Okay. Yeah, you're right on top of it.
Hey, Chris.
Hi. Fantastic job, you guys. It's been a very informative session. Very future-looking question. So if you fly the drone up another 50,000 feet and you look around Indiana, there are innovation districts springing up at Purdue and Notre Dame and IU and Rose Holman. What can we do to make sure that 5 to 10 years from now we've created a synergistic community of innovation districts, they're not competing against each other, and that we've really sort of raised the tide and raised all the boats together as we move forward into the future?
Well, I'll take a first stab at that.
Okay.
So we have been talking at 16 Tech with all of those universities about a partnership. And also, you mentioned Notre Dame, Purdue, Rose Holman, IU, even Crane, which is a research institute in southern Indiana associated with, is it Crane?
Naval War.
They're doing something in this area. So we do think that each of these innovation districts offers something unique, and we do want to have a collaboration. And so those conversations have been going on and are ongoing.
I would build on that, just again, new to the game, but watching Bob and Emily and Jay, they've really been networking out in the entire state as a single community, and they've been getting a lot of feedback about what's going well, what could be done differently, are there opportunities to replicate learnings but not duplicate programming or assets. So I really think that they're setting the vibe that you're concerned about, hey, it's one state, how do we play together, how do we complement, and how do we make sure we've got that nice network where if 16 Tech District isn't the right space, Bob knows exactly who to call or Emily knows exactly who to reach out to make sure that folks get connected with the right resources, the right location, and the right people.
And you could see something like that occurring in Northeast Indiana that has a specialty in orthopedics that, you know, if there's something here, if they already aren't aware of it, you know, putting them in Fort Wayne's incubator, I'm blanking on the name right now, but some of the work they're doing. You can see in
Electric Works.
Got it. So we have time for one more question. So,
while we're waiting for a hand to go up, I would also build that BioCrossroads has really set the foundation for those folks to play on that network.
Okay, thanks.
So I just, because I know you're standing right there, but he's totally my hookup go-to guy on that.
Yeah, we try. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Brian. Excellent presentation. As we all know, science is an international sport. With the hiring of Reiner Fisher and wonderful international ideas that we've been floating over the last few years, what is our game plan for 16 Tech, Bob and Rob, for reaching out and for international capital, talent, and science to move to the next level for us here in Indiana?
Great. Well, I would first say that that speaking up for the IBRI, I know they're already doing that.
Right.
They're searching for talent globally. What we're trying to do at 16 Tech is to create a place that is going to make it easier, not just for the IBRI, but for Cook for Gentech to attract the talent from around the world that they're trying to bring here. One of the reasons why we decided to pursue a partnership with 1776, which I mentioned, is because they are on the East Coast and they have a national and a global network, and we think it's really important for Indiana to tap into those kinds of national and global networks that already exist. So as we thought about who to partner with, that was one of the considerations. Who already has tentacles out around the world that we can plug into? But we have to do a lot more thinking about that, for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The global nature of the opportunity, we've got to keep high on our minds. In our short time, we've shipped already into 40 countries, and I don't mean to make it a commercial argument, but actively staying involved. We have a fairly big research collaboration going on in Italy. We've had the Italians in town quite a bit. We just got a crew back from Korea over the weekend. Because my parent company is a very globalized company, we bring that same thought process. We've started where we started, but we've been investigating different models. One that we've looked at, HealthWorks, which is Royal Dutch Philips, or Philips Healthcare, their play on sort of accelerator, incubator, Boston-based, not unexpectedly, but they're in Mumbai. They've got a place in China. They're in Europe, maybe in Cambridge in Europe, but they've got sort of a global network of five or six versions of their standalone innovation center for that reason, to get that global reach. Certainly, again, when you get corporate players, the Lilies, the Cooks, others that just sort of have global in their blood, I think we start where we start, but absolutely Cook Indiana on a global scale. When you tell the story, when I'm other places and I say, here's what's going on in the state of Indiana, it always raises eyebrows, whether I'm in Europe or Asia or somewhere here in the States on one of the coasts. We've got a lot going on, and when we actually tell the story cohesively, everybody goes, my gosh, what's going on there? So I think we've got a lot of possibilities globally over time. I think we need to always keep that high in our mind, that we're starting where we start, but we got to keep pushing out. We got to, because you're right, there's cool science going on everywhere, and there is disruptive science going on everywhere. And certainly on the R&D side of what we do, we spend a lot of time with our folks keeping them out internationally so that you don't get too myopic about what's just happening next door. But there's some pretty cool stuff happening next door, too. So
I think it's important, though, not just to go after established OUS talent or companies. It's how do you give those students who are trying to decide what they want to do and where they want to go a first look or something to compare to. And I know that that's one opportunity that the IBRI looks at, is how to bring some of those kind of postdoc graduate students across from an OUS perspective so that they get experiences. I know that's something that's on the radar that they're fleshing out as well.
Yeah. Well, I want to, before we have Lori Leroy wrap up, I'd like to get a round of applause for our speakers. I've learned a lot today. I hope you have too. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Lori Leroy, VP of Marketing for BioCrossroads, to wrap it up.
Great. Thanks so much for attending today. It was a wonderful session, and we're all really looking forward to the transformative innovation that's going to happen at 16 Tech. So a couple plugs right now. We're right in the midst of our event season with BioCrossroads. So just under 3 weeks away, we've got the Indiana Life Sciences Summit, which actually is taking off of some of these conversations where our overall focus is on injecting technology into the life sciences. So we have some phenomenal speakers, not just from our local big companies, but also national and global companies around the world. So I encourage you to go to our website and check out the agenda and attend. We've got postcards scattered about with a code to get $20 off. So take a look at that. We also have another Frameworks just on the heels of the summit. On October 19th, we'll be back at Butler, and we're going to partner with our sister initiative, Ascend, Indiana, who's doing the workforce development work, and we're going to focus on what we're doing within healthcare and life sciences through the Ascend program. So really looking forward to that. So look for those emails to come out soon so you can register for that. We, along with our summit, we have a scientific specific session that is now full day thanks to my advisory committee, Chris Baduro. So that will be a full day. So if you're a scientist or researcher, you're interested in what's going on, we really encourage you to attend. We've got a lot of different activities going on at the summit this year with a couple competitions. We've got our poster sessions where we'll have high school students all the way up to folks in industry, and so we're really looking forward to it. So stay tuned via email and other things. We've got a lot of events coming up, and again, greatly appreciate our panel today and the discussion. Thanks.